Accession number 17731, Reel 4.
Mr. Mott, Reel 4.
Thank you. Well, one day, this Lance Corporal, never seen him before in my life, he came in, said, "Oh, you, you're on a charge." I said, "What for?" "I'm lower." Everybody was low. He said, "Dirty rifle and bayonet." I said, "I don't have a rifle and bayonet." "Well, you do now. I got 7 days CB. Didn't make any difference. I hadn't been allowed out. But then nor had anyone else. But I didn't know that. And it didn't mean anything. It didn't go on my army record because you had to have a 10-day to get it there. I had 7. They knew what they were doing. And life was hell. It was mean. I lined up for me breakfast one morning. He put the tea in half me mess tin, say today, and a couple of rashers in the other half, which went opaque immediately, if frozen, and there was no washing facilities except cold water, and the next day the cook bloke would put it in the other way round, so you got grease. Oh, it was shocking. Food was bad. And then suddenly another Lance Corporal tells me I'm on CO's orders right away. Like now. So I go up to this big place, this orderly room, and he I don't know what his rank was. I understand he was the man in charge, and I rather think he might have been a colonel. He was the essence of good manners, gave me a chair, looked at me, and said, "You didn't enjoy that, did you, soldier?" And I said, "No, certainly not." He said, "Well, it's all over. There's a file," and he threw across the desk, or tossed it, good mannerly, a brown folder, told me to pick it up, go over and sit at that table over there, read it. When you're satisfied with it, just come over and see me. I did that, and I read it. They knew more about me than even my mother knew. They knew more about my parents than my mother or they knew or ever remembered. They knew everything about little Motty boy, where I'd been, what had happened to me in the army, was I a good soldier. Then it got down to character, able to work with women. I didn't know what that meant. Trustworthy. And right across the bottom, which I'm so proud of, officer type. It was a full dossier. Where I went to school, everything. And he said, "We will," or I said, "I'm ready, sir." I went back to him, give him the file. He said, "You're happy with it?" "I suppose so." I didn't know some of those things. "Doesn't matter. You not need to know. It's other people that need to know. You will report to an address we'll give you. Your War Office personnel." "Yes." "At Winchester." I thought, that's good. Winchester. It's a long story. When I got to King's Cross, I got out that train and said to myself, "Winchester can wait. I'm going to Whitley. I've been up there. I've had it. I'm going home for a night." And I did exactly that. And the following morning, I got myself a train from Milford Station, and I went to Winchester. I had to go up to Woking, change at Woking for Basingstoke, Winchester. When I got there, late that afternoon, the registrar, the man I had to see, he'd gone home. He wasn't there, off duty. He was a major. His name was Piggott. And there's nothing you can do, so then you haven't got a bed or anything because you're going on to Bournemouth. I said, "Well, I didn't know that." "No, but that's where you're going," this clerk said to me. He was a sergeant. So was I then. The rank went with the job they'd given me. I had already had them sewn on. And he said, "The nurses have put you up in one of the little wards." All the wards was empty, as far as I know. They put me up there in the bed. I had a damn good night. Good food, good breakfast. Got up, 9 o'clock, walked into that room, that office. And this Major Piggott is in there and he wants to know why I didn't come yesterday. This, that and the other. Where had I been? Who the hell did I think I was? I wasn't going to be no good to him if I didn't know discipline. This sort of talk he did. He gave me a dressing down. Then he said, something about... I could charge you. I said, you can do what you like. And he looked me in the eye. I said, I don't give a B. For you, you rank anywhere. There ain't no fighting going on, mister. Only I'm wounded. I don't want to be big-headed, but I don't see you walking around with me. He said, I'm a doctor. I said, well, I'm sorry. He said, I'll give it to you, lad, he said. I think you'll do. I thought, who the hell is this man? I'll do. And he said, you're going down to take over a convalescent home in Bournemouth, a Red Cross place. I said, why? He said, because that's what they've sorted out for you. He said, son, you'll do as you're told. I said, all right, what does it mean then? He said, I'll tell you. He said, all the Royal Army Medical Corps NCOs are being withdrawn from these places, either given jobs in hospital or they'll be needed at the front when it starts. And they're replacing them with low-graded fellas like you. Well, when I got to Bournemouth, I got myself a magnificent place, an auxiliary hospital on the West Cliff at Bournemouth, the elite, called the Harniman. Harniman. Funny name, H-A-S-H-R-N-E-M-A-N-N, Harniman, on the West Cliff. It's there today. Red Cross took it over, and they're taking soldiers, sailors and airmen, whatever came from the local hospital, but they didn't have any. It was a new thing. They had a corporal there, Royal Army Medical Corps, who was very disgruntled in losing this cushy number, I suppose. And he got posted the next day. He knew where he was going, but he had to leave the next day, and I took over. And it was paying, discipline, and anything the commandant wanted in the way of duty. She turned out to be a woman who detested the name commandant and wanted to be called matron, because it was a civilian hospital, and she was matron before the war. So she was matron, and she had a sister called Bint, lovely old girl there, and some young nurses and old nurses in between what I imagine to be the call-up age, you know. People, volunteers, all Red Cross, VADs. And I settled in there and run that home. And then I stayed a year, and then suddenly there's a War Office appointment, and Major Pickett come down to see me. And he said, I'm sorry, Mott, but you've got to leave. I said, why? He said, well, that's orders. It's War Office again. It's a War Office posting to a place called Tring. I said, well, where's Tring? In Hertfordshire. I said, well, when have I got to go? He said, tomorrow. So I had to pack my kit, nearly in tears. I'd been nearly in tears up at Portobello one night. It nearly broke me there. They stopped me mail up there from Genie. But that's what I've already quoted. Anyway, I got on a train at Bournemouth West, straight through to the Central, straight up to London, straight up to Tring. Got out the train at Tring. It stuck out in Fields, Tring Station. There ain't nobody there, except a few porters. And a young boy comes up to me, and he said, where are you going then, soldier? I said, I'm looking for a place called Drayton Manor. I believe it's a hospital. Yeah, he said, my sister works there as a nurse. So I said, well, how do I get there? We said, it's a long way. It's 5 miles. I said, well, there's no taxis. I suppose a taxi would have cost me half a crown or something. I don't know. There weren't any taxis. And a post office wagon pulled in, and an Air Force truck with a corporal in charge, a WAF. And I said, walked over. I said, here, I got to get to a place called Drayton Manor. She said, I know it, on the way to Aylesbury. It's 4 or 5 miles. I said, yeah, but I can't get there, can I? I said, I've never seen a station like this out in the wild. She said, well, I'm from Horton, and I've to pick another WAF up. The train will be in 15 minutes. I'll take you. Another 15 minutes, I got a kit bag, slung it in the back of this wagon, sits in there with her. Some wife comes out, she meets us, she knew her, taken her back. I thought, well, come off leave or something, I didn't know, nothing to do with me. And we went through Tring, she said to me, this is Tring High Street. There were 14 pubs in Tring High Street, I found out afterwards, 14, in less than 3/4 of a mile. And up the road was this long drive. Long drive, went out of sight. So she said, I'd better drive in. So she drove in right up to this mansion. It had colonnades up the side, and eventually I know it belonged to the Rothschilds. They had a gardener with a walled gardener there. I was acquainted with a lazy old boy. And it was filthy. And a matron came down. And I thanked the RAF and explained they had picked me up at the station. Nobody bothered. And the two girls drove away to Horton. Never see them again. And she said, your room is going to be upstairs there. I'll take you. She took me up. And I noticed it was flagstone floors upstairs as well as down. And they was all sweating with water. And I had a little room, half the size of this room, and just about as long, with a window there, a table there, a typewriter on it there. And I said, I understand I'm in charge. She said, well, we haven't got any patients yet. They're coming in within a week. That they, this has been for being used, she said, as ARP casualties in London. But the army now has it, and they're bringing in soldiers from Berkhamsted and places like that. Oh, I said. So I settled myself in. My blankets was damp the next morning. The cook gave me a beautiful breakfast, and asked me whether I would like it in the sun house. And I said, yeah. And it was not very clean. And there were mice markings or droppings on the bacon she cooked for me. And I'm a little bit uptight. And ground out something a little later in the day, about 10 o'clock. I see your kitchens, love. If you're going to feed army boys in there, they won't want to get fed on mice droppings, will they? And with that, I put the rasher on the table and all, and said, I'll phone London. I don't reckon I work in a place like this for nobody. It is a pigsty. It's dirty. Look at the front steps. The poor little love, I shouldn't have done it, should I? She didn't know whether she was coming or going. And the matron come down the stairs and said, the commandant will see you now. Cool. I'd given that little one a going down, but that woman that's sitting up there in that beautiful office was a woman well over 60. Her son was grown up and he was a prisoner of war and he was a captain, and her name was Bowlby, and her husband was a barrister, and they had a big house down the road, and the war's bloody beautiful. And I, she said, I won't have you talking to my staff like that. I said, the moment the army come in here, ma'am, they're going to scrub them floors. I say so. I do have an officer in charge of me at Birdcage Walk. And, you'll live and learn. So, of course, she was an old battle axe. And I'd been there 2 or 3 days, and I'm telling you the truth, the woman's... Two women came in to clean the place, see, and they didn't like Muddy Boy. They didn't like that sergeant looking down saying, why have you bothered to sweep it when it should need scrubbing? I see, sister, you can see who you damn well like. I used to, I've been in better barrack rooms than that place. And the following morning, a tall woman looms up at the front door, dressed in red, with... Red Cross medals. I didn't know what they had medals. Elegant looking female. And she looked at me and smiled. And she said, you must be Sergeant Mott. I said, that's me. And I ain't very happy, ma'am. Who are you? I'm Commandant, she said. I said, we got one in here. I know, Mrs. Bowlby. Her bite's far worse. Or something like that. You know, her bite is not so...
Bark is worse than her bite.
That's exactly right. And it turned out to be it was like that. And I said, who are you? She said, I'm Mrs. Simpson. I'm in charge of the nurses here and everywhere else. Red Cross. and my husband is Dr. Keith Simpson. Oh. She said, what room did they give you, Sergeant? I said, that one there. My blankets are damp, been damp for 5 days. I'm terribly unhappy. It's flagstone floors. I don't like the gardener. I don't like anybody here, and the kitchen's filthy. She said, I will take a look at that. I said, well, can you do anything about it? Might be able to. So she goes upstairs and sees the old bird up there and apparently has coffee and tea, you know, and I'm offered the same, and they send for me, see? And I go up and tap on the door and both of them, I thought, I can fix both of you because I'll get on one of them trains once and I'll go back and personally, absent without leave, and I'm going to tell them in London. Okay. It was all very lovely, all very lovely. And Mrs. Simpson said to me, the changeover has just happened, Sergeant. We've had other forces in here from London, ARP, and we've had them in and out all the time. And now it's going to be, there will not be any patients coming in for a fortnight. I said, they told me this week, a fortnight. Well, I looked at her and it flashed through my mind. Don't push me, ma'am. You're just a woman. I've done the same to other officers. I might do it to you. And I might be rude. When she spun round and she said, a fortnight. I said, all right, a fortnight. She said, I'll see you downstairs, Sergeant. I grind out some remark and left and waited down by the door for her. Nothing to do. And she said, you'll get along well here, Sergeant Mott. It's not a very nice place. It's very old. It belongs to the Rothschilds. The old gardener lives here for till he dies. I said, and the army feeds him because he's been round to me demanding a 2-gallon Dixie of tea. How many when? I said, tea's rationed, ain't it? She said, that's quite all right. It can be found. Give him his tea. I ain't giving him his tea. You got to cook. Didn't know sergeants was mess orderlies, ma'am. She said, get in the car. I said, I'm on. You can get in the car. I thought, she can't harm me, you know, this sort of thing. I got in the car. She drove down that long drive and she turned right for Tring. And she went down through Tring and she pulled in her pub. And she called it the Rose and Crown. It was up on there, Rose and Crown Tring. It's there today, up and back. And she said, I'm going to buy you a beer. And I might even buy you a lunch. And I thought, well, that's something, isn't it? You know, we went in, I had a pint of beer. She bought it. She had a gin and tonic. I can remember to this day. And she said, we'll have a bar meal to somebody in there who evidently she knew. And she said, my husband and I sit in that little alcove over there, and that's where I'd like to sit today, in this beautiful uniform. Beautiful it was. She said, we'll have a snack. I think it was a ploughman or something. She said to me, I'll take you back, Sergeant Mott. She said, you've got to stay there. You're linked by phone there. Yeah, I said, I know that. It's all been explained to me. I've got to sleep there. She said, yeah, that's all right. But I live over just across two fields here, she said, at a place called Dancer's End. It's a lodge. She said, my husband bought it for me when I gave birth to twins. He's in London at Weymouth Street, which is Harley Street. She said, you'll get to know about it. And with that, she left me. And I thought, why couldn't that one be the commandant here, you know? And the other one came down and they really and truly were not, they were friends, but the elderly one didn't like this Mrs. Simpson one bit for some reason or other. And many little comments she made to me, oh, I wouldn't take too much notice of that, when I've said, well, I've had an invitation. But anyway, cut a long story short, a couple of days later, I get a phone call, there's a man on the other end and he said, Sergeant Mott, I said, yeah. He said, I understand you've met my wife, Mrs. Simpson. I'm Dr. Simpson. Like you to come round and have drinks Sunday morning. He said, now, I understand you passed a comment. You're in charge. I said, that's right. As far as the army is, sir, that's me. and I'm not letting go of that for no Red Cross commandant. And he said, well, then you'll be able to do as you like then, Sergeant Bott, won't you? And get here about 12. And he put the phone down. I didn't have to ask. I had no people there. And I went. And he said, I'm Dr. Keith Simpson, the Home Office pathologist. He said, you'll get to know me a lot. He said, but what I want to tell you, Sergeant, is you're very welcome here. When you get too fed up over there with the old bird down the lane, you can come here. My wife will come and get you and tell you when it's convenient. Oh, I said, that's nice of you. He said, have another beer. I said, I think I will. He had bottled beer there. And we sat there. And he said, will you stay to lunch? I said, no, I hadn't better. I hadn't better. They're getting a meal up there for me. I'm victualled up there, you know. He said, I know. there was no shortage of food at that Dancer's End Lodge. I'd already seen it. Joints, eggs, butter. See? Well, eventually, cut a long story short, I pelled up, is the words, with Mrs. Simpson, who took me everywhere. And she said to me, I'm in charge of the Land Army girls, Sergeant, and I must make a visit to a certain farm. Would you like to come? Yeah, I would. We go, we have tea with the farmer. He's got a litter of pigs. It's a pig farm. Litter of pigs everywhere. And he's showing us these pigs, and he's telling me not to get near that one because it bites. And you don't want to get bitten by a pig. And no, I didn't know nothing about pigs. Well, we went back in and had tea. Proper farmhouse. I don't know how many kids he had, but there could have been 13 of us sitting round a table in there for tea. Big cake. Lots of tea. Lots of everything. And he said to Mrs. Simpson, I put the stuff in the car. Oh, thanks very much, he said. That's kind of you. He said, but, ma'am, he said, I think I could do with another girl, you know. We're busy here at this piglet time. Oh, he said, I did put the things in the car, ma'am. She said, that'll be all right, I'll see to that. Wrote it down. When we got back to dancing, I'm bringing in slices of pork, you know, joints, eggs, all sorts of things off a farm, potatoes, the lot. And we put them in there, and I'm no fool, I've been trained. And I said, that's another Land Army girl on the payroll then. Oh, well, he needs it, Mr. Martin. I thought, yeah, he needs it, doesn't he? Yeah, great. That's what they did. You helped me, you scratched my back. That's what it had to be. And the farmers had it, didn't they? And that's what happened. And that's the way it went on all the time. And I used to go over to Dancer's End. I used to get that blue. I'd done my work. My postings had come in for the different people back to hospital or back to RTU. It was this sort of thing. And the place was clean. It was buttoned up, I called it. Once, I made a tour of the wards. They had wards, which were big rooms. And 6, 7, 8, 9 in a room. Nice beds, everything. One was empty. And a sergeant by the name of Rustcroft. He said, he'll be in a minute. I said, he should have been in at 10. I said, it's now 11. Oh, well, it's a long walk. I said, okay. Send him down to me when he comes in. Yeah, all right, he said. He was a patient, Sergeant Ashcroft, ginger-haired fella. The man came in a little bit later. He came down to my bedroom, come office, and I promptly told him, where have you been? Oh, a long way up from John. I said, I don't believe you. You'll be posted away from here tomorrow morning. We have no posting for your son, but you're back to Berkhamsted Hospital. The registrar will take care of you up there. Be ready for the ambulance, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Make sure you're in it. I'll be there. I phoned, told them, sending him back. Won't going to have him there. And I got called over the coals because the old Batlack said, I'll do the dismissal, she said. I said, he's a soldier. You're not. He comes under me, ma'am. He goes. He don't come in here. Never had no more absentee or late coming in, ever. And that is a fact. Now, I did that right up till I went back to Gravesend in 1945 for release. Asian Service Group 26. And that's where I stayed working in the orderly room on Class B releases. That's people who put the roofs back on London, tradesmen, slaters and tilers, carpenters, glaziers, people like that. And Buckingham Palace staff, they came under the same order, come out before their time to get back to their duties. And that's where I worked till I got demobbed from Gravesend and came out and thinking, I'm married now. I don't have a home. I don't have nothing. And we started from there. That's the end of my story.
What was the title of the job which you had at Drayton Manor?
NCO in charge, military personnel. Of course, it come under commandants. They did their staff. They did all the accounts and things like that that was appertaining to the expenses, which I suppose the War Office paid through a grant, Red Cross.
Was that the same title that you had also at Bournemouth?
Yeah, that's the job they sorted me out for. Able to work with women. Didn't know it at the time. Got along well. I wasn't going to stand no bull from anybody. I had a head as big as 10, I reckon. I'm not ashamed of it. I was a good sergeant.
And coming back to the Portobello place that you were at, the Army Selection Centre, or the School for Broken Hearts.
That's what they nicknamed it.
From what I understand, from what you've said, they were deliberately trying to persuade character. People to get out of the army who wanted to stay on.
No. Oh, no. I suppose I might have been an oddity because everybody wanted to get their ticket, they called it. But I wasn't going to go. I had nothing to come out for, and I thought, you did it to me, you look after me. That deep-seated in my mind, it could have been that. But this is where they sorted men out for character. They put you through whatever they thought was necessary. Dreadful, really, little thing. Like cold food, nowhere to wash, mud up to your ankles, and people bullying you with a rank lower than you. They were all. And incidentally, one part I did leave out of there was a man came in that Nissen hut there one night, a Lance Corporal stripe showing, and I'm very nearly in tears. I'm broken-hearted. And he said to me, I didn't ought to tell you this, fella. He said, but has it never occurred to you that we're all Lance Corporals here? And I thought, yeah, so they are. I never noticed that. He said, well, I'd like to tell you, he said, it's you and me in this Nissen hut. I said, yeah. He said, well, my rank is higher than yours. We wear one stripe here because that's the law, as it stands in this camp. I said, yeah. He said, it's done for certain reasons. Okay, if we can rattle you and you throw a punch at me or kick me or not just you, any, that goes down in his report, Dad, just looking into you, boy. He said, now, what can I tell you? If you ever mention this conversation, they'll sack me. I've broken the rules. He said, but I've watched you, I've seen you, you've suffered. Yeah, I said, I've suffered, I was a pig, wasn't I? He said, well, I'll give you one word of advice, that's keep your eyes and ears open and your mouth